Welcome to the Folk of the Footbridge podcast. Join us as we take you on a journey through time and over the River Usk. We'll delve into the history books and share with you memories, music and poems as you walk along the riverbank today. Start your journey on the east bank at the base of the footbridge near Horton's Coffee Shop. Inspiration for the Folk of the Footbridge stems from the city footbridge in front of you. Every day, hundreds of people cross the river using the footbridge. Children on their way to school, commuters, families going shopping, sports fans heading to the game, cyclists, runners, and people meeting friends at nearby coffee shops and restaurants. Did you know that French circus star Olivia Rousteing performed the highest ever wire walk in Europe along the top cable of our award-winning bridge in August 2010? To take you along to your next destination at the foot of Newport Bridge, aka the Town Bridge, Taylor Lee Payne and Year 4 pupils from Clyver Primary School have created a water-themed soundscape.
Hi, I'm Taylor Lee Payne and I created this soundscape called Journey with the Sewers with the help of a wonderful Year 4 group at Clyver Primary School. This piece explores the journey of the sewage lines in Newport, and to accumulate these sounds, I asked the help of these pupils to gather my sound material to produce these soundscapes. Firstly, we start off with some toilet sounds and then begins the journey through the pipes, into the pumping station and finally into the River Usk, as well as some additional sounds to remind us of the footbridge. Not only this, the pupils also assisted me in giving this piece a name.
Thank you.
The Usk is difficult to cross, with fast-flowing currents created by the second largest tidal range in the world, the first being the Bay of Fundy in Canada. This means that the Usk has the highest tidal range of any city river in the world. Newport's first bridge, the Town Bridge, was built by the 1100s. An important crossing point, it was guarded by Newport Castle and used to collect tolls and taxes. During the Industrial Revolution, coal and iron poured through Newport from the valleys to the north. Newport's foundries roared, her docks heaved, and the streets bustled with an influx of workers. At the start of the 1800s, the population here numbered just over 1,000, but by 1901, this had risen to over 67,000. The west side of the town had grown crowded, and Newport were looking to develop the east bank. The town bridge was widened in 1866, but this was still inadequate for the volume of traffic now using it. The crossing was heavily congested and inconvenient for the southern end of town. In 1902, work began near the docks on the Transporter Bridge. When it opened in 1906, it became a key commuter route for workers and families in Pilgwently. The current town bridge that you see in front of you has been in place since 1927. During its construction, a temporary wooden bridge was erected alongside it to still allow residents and traffic to cross the river at this point. The old town bridge was then demolished and this new version created. You can find the foundation plaque on the middle of the north side of the bridge. The bridge was not only used as a route across the river, but also used as a stage for spectacular escape acts by the legendary Harry Houdini. Harry Houdini's grand illusions made him one of the most famous escapologists. He was born Eric Wise on March 24, 1874, in Budapest, and was one of seven children. The Wise family moved to Appleton, Wisconsin when he was a child. At 13, Eric moved with his father to New York City to find work. In 1894, he launched his career as a professional musician and renamed himself Harry Houdini, but he soon became better known for his feats of escapology using handcuffs, touring America and Europe. Houdini first came to Newport in April 1905, spending a week-long residency in the city performing at the Lyceum Theatre. He often got himself locked in police stations and then staged his escape from the cells. In March 1912, he announced at the Empire Theatre that he would leap from Newport Bridge into the river, shackled with manacles similar to handcuffs. But the police refused to give the illusionist permission, writing in the local press that he would be arrested should he be caught. With thousands gathered on Newport Bridge and police out in force, Houdini set up a plan of action. He placed a lookalike, along with the theatre manager and members of the press, in an open car to act as a decoy. While the police were distracted, Houdini made his way to the opposite side of the bridge. Already stripped and handcuffed, and leapt into the waiting waters of the River Usk. He freed himself and swam ashore. When he returned to the Empire that evening, he was greeted by a reception with the local newspaper, the Argus, stating that it was a triumphant vindication of Houdini's pluck and resource. He was soon summoned to court, with charges relating to obstructing a public highway. Fittingly, the escapologist was allowed to walk free after the magistrate at Newport Police Court dismissed the case. Take a walk over Newport Bridge and imagine the crowds of people eagerly awaiting Houdini's great escape while listening to three arias composed and performed by Helen Woods and sung by David Wynne Evans. Thank you.
Would you like to see a legendary trick? Well, it's your lucky day. The one and only Harry Houdini. The things I do are incredible. When you see me do it, you will be amazed. See my amazing tricks, see how I take risks. Would you like to see me walk through walls? Jump in the river, see me breathe underwater.
Pass along the steel wave. It stands on the riverbank at a place once known as Town Reach, where commercial and passenger wharves thrived from the early 1800s. The Steel Wave by Peter Fink reflects Newport's history of steel manufacturing. Erected in 1990, the sculpture was made using 50 tons of sheet steel and stands at 14 metres high. As you walk along the riverbank towards the Riverfront Theatre, try and spot the creosote-soaked timber stumps of the wharves and disused dry docks. These act as a reminder of the days when the Usk was busy with shipping and workers. From the late 19th century until the 1950s, paddle steamers of the White Funnel Line sailed during the summer from the wharf near the old Art College. Steamers could easily pass under the transporter bridge, further upstream to the Newport Bridge, but as more and more bridges were built across the river, the height prevented ships coming so far. In the 1970s, when the Waverley and Balmoral came into service, they had to moor at Newport Docks. Continuing with our seafaring story, take a seat or pause for a moment at the Riverfront Theatre to hear part of the story of the Newport medieval ship. A surprise discovery during construction of the Riverfront Theatre in 2002 propelled Newport to worldwide fame through the powerful voices of local residents. Archaeologists watching over the building work uncovered a timber-lined drain and a stone slipway that they identified as being medieval. As the mud was cleared, the remains of a large ship were discovered. News of the ship's discovery went public and the Save Our Ship campaign was launched to fight for its excavation. The campaign collected signatures for a petition and organised public meetings, a march on the Civic Centre, a 24-hour roadside vigil and a mini armada of small boats to sail past the riverfront site. The collective force of enthusiastic and passionate residents ensured that this incredible piece of Newport's history could start its final journey to preservation. One of those residents was Glenys Silverson. As a founding member of the Save Our Ship campaign, Glenys created banners, raised funds and local support. She sadly passed away in 2005, but in the words of her daughter Rachel, "It is a great example of how much a community can achieve when it works together, and that serves as a wonderful legacy to her."
The riverfront area kind of quite important to me because I come from a family that we've always had an appreciation of heritage and culture. So I don't really remember anything else. So I remember from a young age knowing that I wanted to work in heritage and museums. And it was basically because my family were that kind of family. We used to have UK domestic holidays. We'd spend a lot of time in different parts of Wales, but it was all about really immersing yourself in heritage and culture and history and historic buildings. So I think I'm lucky in that respect that I have parents who just really were into that kind of thing. So it wasn't really a surprise that I went into heritage. And then when the excavation started happening of the Newport ship back in 2002, that's a long time ago, I wasn't shocked at all that my mum really got into it. At that time, I was working and living in a different Newport. I was working for the Isle of Wight Museum Service and living in Newport on the Isle of Wight. And I remember my mum phoning me and she was super excited because I'd done an archaeology degree as well. So she was like, "Oh, Rach, you won't believe what they found on the riverfront. They're building this new theatre. They found a ship. They found this really old ship." And my mum was so excited and but quite canny as well, because there were already rumblings in Newport. Like you could get a feel for there was a bit of a reluctance to try and save that heritage because it was going to cause a huge amount of disruption to the riverfront building. It was going to be expensive. It was almost like a little bit of a spanner in the works, and that's how it was being viewed. But my mum was super excited. She's like, I've written a letter to the South Wales Argus, all about how we have to keep this heritage because this is great for Newport. This is the kind of thing that's going to put Newport on the map. And it was after she wrote that letter that Charlie Ferris, who was at that time a local businessman, owned Ferris's chip shop at that time that used to be in the old bus station, he got in contact with my mum and they became a little bit of a dynamic duo. So they decided to kind of try and really invigorate people to care about the ship. So Charlie invited my mum in, said, come to the chip shop, we'll have a coffee, we'll have a chat. And it just all took off from there. Now my mum, Charlie was more dynamic, wanting to be like the spokesperson, whereas my mum is not that kind of person at all. She wants to contribute and she wants to help, but she doesn't want the limelight. So my mum and Charlie organised this big meeting at the Dolmen Theatre that took place in, I think, August 2002, just to really kind of tell people what it is that had been found, why does it matter, why is it important. And then the friends of the Newport ship just took it off because people just all wanted to get involved, all wanted to volunteer, all wanted to do their bit. And largely what that work involved initially was standing on the riverfront, getting to know the archaeologists, and actually just getting loads of people to sign petitions and say, look, we support this, we want Newport to keep this heritage. So there was just a lot of free time, a lot of weekends, evenings, standing where the Riverfront Theatre is now and just really getting people to know what it was that they were finding. And I think what was interesting was that the community of Newport who were fighting for that also became the mouthpiece for the archaeologists, because the archaeologists who were engaged on a professional basis weren't necessarily allowed to engage with the public and tell them why it mattered. But the archaeologists were talking to the campaigners. The campaigners were then disseminating that message of, look, this is really important. This isn't just any old ship. This is a significant find. My mum was very quick to use me as well, powers of persuasiveness, because I was working on the Isle of Wight. And one of the people I worked with was a conservator, and he'd actually worked with the Mary Rose Project. So my mum phoned me one day and just said, look, do you think you could get a contact for somebody in the Mary Rose Museum? And just maybe see if they can get involved in helping to advocate for this and helping us to campaign. So through my colleague as well, so it, you know, this spread way more widely than Newport South Wales. So I was getting my Isle of Wight colleagues involved, and we managed to kind of get my mum connected with somebody from the Mary Rose Project as well, who did come down, and he did get actively involved in helping campaign to save that heritage. So it's an amazing project, and I think I was excited from a distance as well, because it's like, this is great to see people in Newport actively saying to the council and saying to people, we don't care what you think, this is important, this is a really great thing for the city of Newport, come on, get your act together. The friends group as well then became like this kind of quite busy hub as well. So, you know, my mum was very artistic, always been quite artistic, and so she designed this big banner, and she like kind of painted a ship on it, and it said Save Our Ship, and the group absolutely embraced that title as well, so they called themselves the Save Our Ship group. She met with a local potter who gave her like a really cheap rate on getting some kind of medieval style mugs and things done, the whole idea being, look, if we want to keep this, we have to financially contribute as well. So they started to create t-shirts and mugs and pottery that they could sell so that that money could then be put into the ship project. So yeah, it became like a busy little hub of people who were just kind of, And they were just getting more and more people involved with it, getting more and more people to care about it. And I think it just escalated to the point that Newport Council couldn't really ignore it anymore, because there were too many people saying, what are you doing? You know, that whole riverfront area is so rich, it going all the way down to the Severn Estuary. You know, the number of boat finds that they've kind of found that maybe haven't been maintained or kept. But I also think what was great about that whole project was that there was an engagement between the museum service, the archaeologists and the people like I've never seen before.
Older than the Mary Rose, the ship has been undergoing conservation in a warehouse in Estuary Way. Excavations of the artefacts and remains on board suggests that the ship probably sailed the Lisbon to Bristol trade route and was built in the Basque country.
Shumai, my name is Mandy. I'm from Hong Kong and I'm currently a student teacher based in Wales. A bit about me. I'm a composer whose music has been workshopped and premiered by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales as part of Composition Wales 2021, and I'm really excited to be commissioned by Opera Sonic to compose and record a piece for piano, and it is called Ebb and Flow. My piece is inspired by one of the many blog posts on the folk of the footbridge, and I was particularly interested in the work that Glenys Silverson has done to save the Newport ship, and I would love to dedicate this piece to her family in memory of her. A bit about the music. People who know me would know that I have quoted Dies Irae in my recent composition Bells of Wrath, and this is no exception. However, I have changed the harmonic language so that it is more subtle when I reference Dies Irae in the melody, which is introduced in a rather calm and peaceful opening. My piece reflects the legacy of Glenys, the ship, and the energy of the water. Dioch.
A blue plaque commemorating the discovery of the ship can be found on the side of the building. Head towards the footbridge. The striking A-frame elements of the bridge on this side of the river can be seen from many places across the city. Designed by architects Grimshaw, it is a symbolic link with the site's earlier use as trading wharves. It was officially opened in 2006 and is the 9th crossing over the river in the city. Inspired by the footbridge and its users, Christabel Hutchings wrote the poem Our Bridge Before Lockdown. As you walk across the footbridge, listen to her granddaughter Edie reciting the poem.
Our Bridge Before Lockdown, written by Christabel Hutchings and read by Edith McCarron. Masts stretch like fingers into space. Wires hold the structure in place. Crossing Maindy to Newport Centre, a point to pause, look, remember. The north, memories of ancient tribes. The south, bridges close the divide. Time passes, the tide rises and falls. The sun in the sky, a roving ball, shining on mud, water and litter. Bottles thoughtlessly thrown, glitter. Our bridge is a symbol of future vision, of hope for a world with less division. Crowds with black and amber dream, united in their team's esteem. Emotions displayed in wild wars. Babies in prams, children on scooters, cyclists worn with bells and hooters. Thick men and women, old and grey, through moving crowds wend their way. Alone amongst chatter and clatter, an old man pauses, his thoughts scatter. Remembrance of times long ago. From his eyes tears begin to flow. But soon his memories are shared, as people stopped, listened and cared.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Folk of the Footbridge Project, funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund. For more stories and history of the local area, visit our blog, www.folkofthefootbridge.blogspot.com. And please consider joining the Friends of Newport Museum and Art Gallery. A big thank you to Tinshed Theatre, Opera Sonic and Cobra Music Studios for their support with the project. We would also like to thank Helen Woods, the pupils of Cliver Primary School, Taylor Lee Payne, Dove Edwin Evans, Rachel Adams, Mandy Lung, Christabel Hutchings and Edith McCarron for their creative pieces that help us to bring the story of the footbridge and the Usk to life.